One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
So there I am, picking up an edition of Doctor Who, the special edition, and I see lights, camera, action, directing Doctor Who, and who's on the front cover, but of course the slate which has Doctor Who, role 303A, scene 7, scene 2A, director Graham Harper, exclusive interview. Graham Harper, one of six directors, legends of Doctor Who, actually sort of focusing the whole thing up there with David Tennant actually on the front cover. And I thought to myself, well, what a wonderful sort of way this would be to kind of connect producer and writer extraordinaire Arthur Weingarten with, of course, the wonderful worlds of televisual changes. And indeed, a quote that comes, I believe, from Graham's very lips. In the 1980s, director Graham Harper broke the rules of production with spectacular results on serials such as The Caves of Androzani. He brought the same dynamic approach when he returns to direct David Tennant's Doctor. Now we're all artists, says Graham. We can paint our pictures. And if you're talking about artists painting our pictures, who better than Pamela Sue Mann to join us as well? You paint your pictures, don't you, Pamela?
I try.
Exactly. They're word pictures and audio pictures. Arthur, let's come to your good self, etc. Did you ever, were you aware of Doctor Who, or was it a case of you were far too busy producing May Gray, writing The Addams Family, doing all of those kind of things, or was Doctor Who a kind of sideshow which you thought, how quaint and British?
No, I was very well aware of it, but I never watched it. I must confess something at the outset. I am not a David Tennant fan, so... for whatever arcane reason, he turns me off.
Oh, wow.
Well, as you know, Graham, we never shy away from controversy here. And Arthur,
and I never watched it in all its manifestations over the years. I never really watched it. So I'm blank as to that series.
But what about the whole notion of television changing? I mean, actually, Graham, would you like to just explain that statement? Because as I say, I've quoted you directly. Now we're all artists. We can paint our pictures. I mean, you also got to say one of the most important differences between shooting with multi-camera and single camera is the lighting.
Well, it's not the only thing, but you can't light for every shot that every camera in the studio is going to get if you're using a multi-camera setup. And I think what I meant, gosh, I sounded so pompous. What I really meant by we can all now paint pictures, that's not totally true. I mean, I wasn't one of them, but there were some fantastic directors who really did understand how to make multi-camera studios brilliant with their crews, etc. I found it an awful way of making a programme. And by shooting single camera, as if you're shooting a movie, you shoot and light and compose each shot as best and as exciting as you can, you know, and I think that that's what I meant by we all get to paint our pictures. And then the use of the lenses and use of the cameras. With multi-camera studios, you didn't have a lot of time to start playing around with the different styles of lenses that you can use or choosing your lenses and being exciting with them. You just had to get on with it and get the scenes done and make a program as cheaply as you could. Well, that was my experience.
Arthur, were you concerned about your budgets when you were doing The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Wonder Woman, etc.? Did you ever get the producers, or when you were a producer, did you say, what about the budget for this?
Well, yes, of course, obviously, that was a constant problem and should be because it's a commercial medium. But pick up what was just said. There have been a notable number of cinematographers who have changed and become directors. And when you have that, if they were good cinematographers, if they were good lighting cameramen, they made superb directors, whether they got involved with the dramatics or not is another story, but in terms of the pure technique, lighting a set is so difficult because you have still light, spill lights, you have dead areas and all of that. And a director working closely with a cinematographer, a good one, is very often saved. It's like the sergeant in the army saves the colonel.
Yes, I agree with that. Totally.
Yeah, deep, deep, deep philosophical hours. I've got to use the other line from the end. Don't worry, Graham. I'm not going to actually just simply quote from this particular article, but I think it was very well put together by Nick Sedgefield. And let's face it, let's say the only other directors who have featured Waris Hussein, who directed the first Doctor Who, Paul Joyce, Douglas MacKinnon, James Strong, and Rachel Talalay. So they were the other folk who were actually featured, as well as your good self, in this director special. Mm-hmm. But as a boy, Graham dreamed of making Westerns, the antithesis of traditional BBC drama production. I mean, Arthur, how can we make Graham's dream come true? Can you write him a Western that he can direct, for goodness sakes?
I wish I could.
Thank you very much.
Nothing would give me more pleasure. But we can dream. You can dream.
Yes, I dream a lot.
Dream it away.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, I've kind of done my Westerns, because when I did Robin Hood, that, although it wasn't
close enough, yes,
it's close enough. I mean, I've got there, bows and arrows and guns. I mean, it was okay. It was fine.
Right. Sorry, bows and arrows and guns. What kind of Doctor Who, what sort of science fiction world was this in which you had bows and arrows and guns?
Sorry, I beg your pardon. It wasn't guns, but we had explosives. We had a Chinaman come in one of the episodes bringing dynamite for people to blow people up. So that was... I suppose, if you like that sort of thing, it's very exciting.
And isn't that always the case? If you're stuck with a historical anomaly or a temporal anomaly, bring in the Chinese. It works so much, virus onwards. You know, there we are.
I have to tell you a story about that, if I could just interject. I was doing the Mod Squad, and a new writer, his agent begged me to see him, and I did. And he came in and he told the story that was, I mean, to say that it was trite was beyond belief. It was told 100 times over. So I said to him, that's hardly an original story. Why did you come in here with that? He said, I have a trick up my sleeve. Yes, yes. And what will the sleeve produce? He said, instead of being white, they'll be Chinese. That was it.
it's a way forward, and let's hope the World Health Organization are aware of that. Arthur, a little bit of a reveal here. Annie Snart, of course, actually had your wonderful biography of the Empire State catastrophe, etc., on her bedside table for, I believe, Annie, 3 years. It was nearly 3 English years that you sort of kept it there from that point of view.
Long and reading and reading.
I think you're intent on embarrassing me now, aren't you, Alex? Because you've had to pay for something.
Annie, please, you know, if we want embarrassment, we'll go to Leanie Jane. I mean, you know, singer-songwriter who does all sorts of other areas. So step away from Leanie Jane. Annie, any questions you'd like to put to the team at present? Pamela is still recovering from Arthur's revelation about David Tennant. It's okay, Pamela. Don't worry.
Well, I'm going to go over to you, Graham, for a moment, because I've been reading up, and I'm sorry to say this, but I was only a little girl when this was on, but I've been reading up and you worked on Angels. Am I right? In the 70s, and just I always
for the benefit of Arthur and Pamela and American listeners, that's not Charlie's Angels. It's a completely different series all about the health service.
It's fantastic. And again, because I was very, very much younger, I used to have very much like your your dear wife now, Mr. Weingarten, going on to you for a moment. I had lots of childhood problems as well. So I used to have time off school and I used to love it because my mum would put Angels on. It would come on like a lunchtime and I absolutely loved watching it. I was going to be a nurse for years and years and years and years and it never happened for me.
That's probably because we put you off.
No, you did. It was just absolutely brilliant. Very, very different to Casualty of Today, but I still think that I tend to live my life in the past a lot, as I'm told, but I just think that you can't beat the classics. So what was actually your involvement in that? Did you actually write some of the storylines or what was your involvement?
So in the 70s, I'd have been a first assistant director. So I worked with various directors and different casts on Angels. Did it start in the 70s? I think it was a bit later.
I thought it was. I'm thinking of where I remember watching it and where I would be living at the time. And I'm sure it would have been the 70s, probably late 70s, maybe 78.
It could be late 70s. By the time got there, I was firsting probably then. I then definitely, as a director, that was my first job. Working on Angels, so I did the first episodes of a brand new series. I don't know which series it was, but a brand new, you know, the start of a new series of Angels, introducing a new set of young trainee nurses. The first one was action packed because it involved an accident with a train and someone who'd thrown themselves on the line or whatever, and so it was pretty gory and pretty horrific. Considering the time it went out, and in those days, it really was a soap, whereas Casualty, although it has become soapy, it's much more like, Casualty is an hour long, or 45, 50 minutes long, different stories each week, but with a kind of huge arc for that series, as it were. Angel was really half an hour, very fast storytelling of each of the different characters' lives and their family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You certainly captured an audience of all ages, because I remember at the time I would only be between the ages of sort of 6 or 8 years of age. And I used to love it. I used to think any minute now, Mum's going to come in and she's going to put it on. We would be great watching it. It was wonderful. Lovely memories. Absolutely brilliant.
Really
memories.
Good. Excellent. Good.
So, Pamela, given that you will have no idea whatsoever was being referred to there in terms of Angels, it was a precursor. It could have become like EastEnders, but, you know, that's a different concept entirely, because there was a thought at one stage that EastEnders would actually be given a sort of twice-weekly slot as well. Who would you like to question? Would it be Arthur? Would it be Graham? Would it be Annie? Where are you going to go?
Goodness me. You know, Oh goodness. I'm so unprepared for this question. Because nor did I know that Aline was gonna be here. So I need to be clear.
Annie, sorry, let's just go briefly back to Pamela. Let's share your New York experience, because Arthur, whereabouts in New York were you originally based? Where were you born? Let's see how far away Pamela actually is at this moment from the Arthur Weingarten base in New York.
I was born in Brooklyn in the Flatbush section, Prospect Park, if that means anything.
Yeah, beautiful park, really, really beautiful park. So we are in, right now we're in Long Island City. So it's, if you go down a bit further along the water, you hit what's now called Dumbo, you hit Greenpoint, Williamsburg, Greenpoint. So that's the tip of Brooklyn. I was just told that the other day. I didn't even remember that was actually right. Brooklyn, not Queens, because Long Island City is in Queens.
Right.
And then Flatbush now is just beyond. You wouldn't recognize it. Sort of like Whitechapel, like the changes that are happening are pretty much the same as in London, you know? What I remember about Flatbush, and I'm not sure if it was around then, but Junior's Deli.
Yes.
Junior's. Yes, and they have not the best matzo ball soup, but they have it's a taste thing. Some people like their matzo balls really big and fluffy.
Well,
one big matzo ball in the bowl.
The matter is, it started out in Miami, And it was always at that level. It was never number one, but it was very famous. And after proms and all sorts of things, we all used to drive out to juniors.
They used to go to juniors. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, they actually had one. I don't know about the pandemic now, but they had one in Grand Central.
Mm. And when you say you don't recognize a neighborhood, I was doing a show for Quinn Martin called Hunter, and it was a modern day bounty hunter. And he said, we're going to do this all on location. Where do you want your first one? I said, where I grew up in Brooklyn, in Flatbush. And he laughed, and he was from Los Angeles. He said, how quaint. We went there. It was only 10 years later. Not only did I not recognize it, we got driven out. they didn't want us in the neighborhood. We were disrupting their lives, all of our trucks and grips and everything. They called the police, even though we had a permit, they called the police and said, get them out of here. That was it.
Wow,
old high school. I wanted to shoot that. Never happened.
Wow. See, for us, all these places you talk about are, not that I've heard of Flatbush, but Brooklyn, etc. They're all locations to us. All the people in England just see America as locations. They're all locations that we've seen on film. So you're all film stars, and you don't really exist as human beings.
We don't have to do anything.
There's a myth.
Yeah, Long Island City is actually Long Island City. I'd call to my friends. I call it Miami. I call it Northern Miami because it really is this where we are. It's sort of where the evil empire, Amazon, was meant to come in, and then the neighborhood fought it, and then they decided not to come in, but they built the infrastructure. So it's really beautiful. It's like a Barcelona meets North Miami. It's pretty cool.
you also have something, the 59th Street Bridge.
Yes.
Simon and Garfunkel.
It's one of my favorite bridges in life, because when you cross from Kennedy coming into the city and you're heading for the 59th, that's your first look at the Manhattan skyline, all the buildings, and it's a treasure. It's a big piece of black metal that sits across the East River, but it's beautiful. I just love it.
So I have a question, Arthur. Then, do you miss New York? I mean, New York's such
enormously. Yes, every day I think of it. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, but I also miss London. Very much. Yeah. I've lived many, many years in London, and I love it. I love it.
Is that where you met Annette?
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, I met her when I was casting the movie of May Gray.
Oh, brilliant.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, you see what lengths I'd go to get an actress?
It shows persistence, Arthur, and true love, as Pamela would say. Perfect cue for the 59th Street Bridge song.
You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. Hello, lamppost, what you knowin'? I come to watch your flowers growin'. Ain't you got no rhymes for me? Do it and do-do, feeling groovy. Ba-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. I got no deeds to do, no promises to keep. I'm dappled and drowsy and ready to sleep. Let the morning time drop all its petals on me. Life, I love you, all is groovy. Ba-da-da-da-da-da,
Arthur, were you ever tempted to actually sing Feeling Groovy whilst crossing the 59th Street Bridge?
From public school on, was designated as a listener. I cannot sing. I'm flat. That's what I am. I'm flat.
So I don't believe that.
I was a listener, right?
I figured it out.
I mouthed it when we had chorus. I mouthed it. Voiceovers were not for me.
Pamela, what have you figured out?
I figured out Graham's quandary. I have a solution. So let's make a music video that's a Western.
Yes, good idea.
Sounds great.
And let's cast Eileen and Alex. And then you can collaborate with Arthur.
Pamela, this is synchronicity in all sorts of wonderful ways. It's like, you know, Snart and Left Cheek working in all sorts of routines with Arthur, you know, putting that into practice. I'm still recovering from the notion that, Arthur, do you mean to say that my whole experience of New York being the home of Theo Kojak is actually false? That actually that there aren't lots of sort of police officers who say "Who love you, baby" on a regular basis?
No. I am saying where I grew up in the Flatbush section, which is the center of Brooklyn, where I went to Erasmus Hall High School and Barbara Streisand and so many people went to that high school. It was iconic. It was an area that really I thought would never change because I was born there. That's, you know. And when I went back 10 years later, everything had changed, except my high school was still sitting there, but they didn't want us to come. And so where I grew up and loved growing up there, I wasn't wanted any longer.
Wrong.
It was really funny. I mean, it was instantaneous. Get out of here. You know, so all of Hollywood, you know, there's the glamour and this. The people who were living there now, which was mostly Jamaicans and people like that, the color of the place had changed. Everything had changed, which is New York.
I reckon if you went back now, you'd have no problem because it's changed so much. It would love you to come in.
Yeah, but the urbanization has been enormous. I mean, we used to laugh and couldn't wait to get out of Brooklyn, and now there are people desperate to buy or rent in Brooklyn. Yes.
Oh, it's brilliant. You know,
things, but New York was always that way, and London as well. London.
The difference, of course, being, Arthur, that the Native Americans saw a lot more changes when they sort of had the original islands before they were purchased for the beads in the first place. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Pamela, over to you. So, grow on ground.
I was only going to ask, Spielberg is just, we're all waiting to see West Side Story, the latest version made by him. And I wonder whether, did you know if he shot any of it in New York? Because the original was shot in New York.
Yes, I think he did.
Good.
I know he shot at the Silver Cup Studios, which is right there at just under the 59th Street Bridge. he had some dance sequences there. And I think he used Broadway and Uptown. So yeah, I think.
I can't wait. I'm dying to see this new version.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but he always loved shooting on location if he could, so.
Right. And indeed, a nice tie-in there, Graham, because it was only a matter of hours ago we were featuring an interview with the wonderful Hollywood actress Lee Taylor Young, who actually held Steven Spielberg's hand at the premiere of E.T. because he was so panicked that it was going to be a complete disaster and flop. So there we are. Just go figure.
That's really good.
Yeah, it works together. Now, Pamela, your chance to throw questions to whomever you wish.
Goodness. Okay. Firstly, I'd like to say that a lot of films are filming here all the time, like to the point where, you know, they make everybody move their cars and it's almost obnoxious. Like, there's so much filming going on here because we're sort of at a cul-de-sac by the water. So filming is a location. This is a fantastic location that they use a lot. I think maybe to Eileen and Graham and Arthur, and of course your good self, Alexis, if you'd like to join in. Question is, what has been topmost on your mind that you'd like to share these past days?
Okay, we'll just hold it momentarily there whilst I just do a slight clarification, because I love this sort of American origin. First of all, it's Annie Snart, okay, which is fine.
Oh, that's so, what I mean.
I know, it's all confusing. She's using somebody else's link. It's there. So I think it's Annie Snart. It's okay. Secondly,
is it Aileen that comes up?
Don't worry about Annie, honestly. And for goodness sake, if you change to your theatrical alter ego of Leanie Jane, it'll confuse matters even more. Secondly,
I now have several names.
Alex is fine. Alexius is the other full name, as Graham will tell you. Alexis, of course, character in Dynasty, played by Joan Collins, nothing to do with me. So just wanted to clarify that. So other than that, all's well. So Arthur, what's been tougher most in your mind recently?
Well, aside from the horrors of the world that we all know and we don't have to be brought up on, I am most excited that the James Webb Deep Space Telescope is about to launch and go 1 billion years back in time.
Oh my God.
To let us see what the universe was like after the Big Bang, a half a billion years after the Big Bang. It will look at 13.5 billion years in space. Now, people who could put it's been 25 years in the making. And every country in the world with a developed science, from England to Germany to France, has had a hand in it. So it's not an American project. It's universal, as it should be. And it is so exciting to me to think that we can look back in time like that. Because for people who can do that, how can we have the situation that we're facing today?
It is extraordinary.
There's my answer. Maybe the phone is ringing. Maybe that's my answer.
It's E.T. E.T.'s ringing.
They're phoning home from the future, quite literally. And I say this as somebody who's just actually purchased a T-shirt which says, "Marty, for goodness sake, never go back to 2020. Never mind. Graham, what's been toppermost in your mind?
Well, what's really worrying me all the time is the Afghanistan situation. We don't really want to get involved in that. We don't have time, but it's just, how have we got into this situation? And when you talk about what Arthur's just been saying, how is it that that can be happening, and yet we have this brilliance about to reveal something? And in the end, do we really want to know? Maybe it's even worse. I don't know.
No, great, Graham, I can tell you, I've been looking around my virtual beach here and I have seen Dominic Raab just kind of chilling out. So that's good.
Oh, yes, there we are. It's all's well.
Annie, what about yourself? Or is it a case of I've already received telephone calls to actually book me for the next few years? So carry on.
Oh, dear. OK, well, I've got three things, so I'm going to go really, really quick. One is the new film studios that's supposed to be being built. I've been thinking about that quite a lot and thinking what wonderful things are going to come out of it. And I'm now trying to think of the location, and I don't want to offend anybody and get this wrong. And I'm trying to think, have you heard about it, Alex? Is it Manchester?
There are several new film studios being put together.
No, I know nothing about it. I don't. There's a new set of studios being built in Hertfordshire somewhere. I saw that as a headline. I didn't really read the story, which I should have done. Over to you.
Yeah, Hertfordshire, easily confused for Manchester at the best of times, really. So
I'm getting quite excited about that and what that's going to bring us. The other one is I'm a huge ABBA fan as well. and always, always looking to see when there's going to be anything new coming out. And of course, it was announced today that apparently there's going to be some new ABBA music coming out. It's actually officially been announced. So I'm so excited about that. And they're thinking about doing a tour of some sort.
Do you know it's a hologram?
Yes, that's the only thing. But you know, I've got this hope, this huge hope inside me that if we get to go and see one of these, I suppose we'll be sitting in a theatre somewhere watching it. I don't know, and they might just appear. I've got this huge hope that we might get them just appear. You know,
well,
for
I
real.
Mean, Annie, just briefly. I mean, we already have the David Tennant. Don't invite him to a party with Arthur Weingarten. A disaster. Arthur, what are your thoughts on Benny, Bjorn, Agneta and Anne-Frid, those Swedish people, of course, who electrified the world with Waterloo back in 1974?
Are you asking me? You must be kidding. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Good.
I am the most provincial person, I think, who ever had anything to do with show business or this or that. I have a feeling after talking with you, I'm so narrow.
Oh, no, not at all.
No,
not
disagree.
I'm so sorry.
Well, Arthur, do you know the Eurovision Song Contest?
Ask Graham if he knows who those people are.
I do, I'm afraid. My wife absolutely adores and wants to see Mamma Mia as many times as possible, which is film.
I heard of Mamma Mia.
Well, that's based on the music of ABBA.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. I'll take back all the things I said about myself. I saw... I'll take that back. I saw a part of a terrible movie with Meryl Streep doing ABBA or whatever it was.
And Pierce Brosnan.
You're very lucky because I saw two.
Oh. Yeah.
I think I like the music. I think the films are awful, but I'm the only person in the world. Now I've found another person who doesn't like them, so that's great.
Yeah, I couldn't believe Meryl Streep was doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. Pamela, have you been getting on down to Mamma Mia and more Mamma Mia?
I do, however, have one current events point coming from New York, being the New York correspondent, as I am at the moment with you all.
Well, Arthur left a few years ago, so you took over the position quite neatly.
Yes.
So, Arthur, do you remember Bushwick?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay, news bulletin. Netflix is building or has built or is going to build a huge soundstage and studios in Bushwick. Now, I know that Silver Cup has expanded and there are sound studios called Broadway Sound Studios or something where films are being made in Williamsburg. And now Bushwick is, and it makes a lot of sense because there's been a lot of industrial space in these places, but it's going to be a massive, huge studio. And I was just told by my friend last night that this is happening. So you could do some research on it, but because I don't have specifics.
Although Pamela, surely, you know, huge studios, I thought everybody was using these to actually make all the motion pictures these days. You know, you just have a little mobile phone, that's all you need.
That's what I make my music videos on. But for anybody who's got a bit of budget, yeah, they can go. And it's great because it's also great for the actors for television because there's work and for crew and for everyone in those unions and everyone that's, interested in making television. All those young people that have moved to New York and gone to college here can now actually have work out of New York, which is very, very hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. It's good for our business, definitely.
So, Annie, I think...
And there's the passing of an era called the motion picture theater. That's the end of that.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe not. Annie, you had three. I think we had, obviously, ABBA. We had the studio that you thought was Manchester, but it's probably Hertfordshire. What's your third one to offer?
Well, the other thing that's been going on my mind a lot recently is the fact that I still haven't finished Annette's book. And I don't want to come to the end of it. I'm loving every minute of it. Oh, and I'm wonderful. Picking up and I'm reading half a chapter here and half a chapter there in between things. And now I'm getting towards, I keep looking at it this way on, and I can see that I'm sort of three quarters of the way through. And now that's starting to upset me a little bit because it's wonderful. Reading about her life. I think I'm going to have to go back to the beginning and start again.
She's sitting across from me smiling, I'm thinking. No, thank you.
I've been telling everybody about it.
It's fair to say Robin Pierce has also taken a copy as well. So he's also got one. So slowly but surely, one person at a time, we're working our way through Where I've Been All My Life. Pamela.
Yes, we are.
I'm going to buy one. I have all these notes of things that I've got to watch and books I've got to read and I've got to catch up and films. So I have nothing to say except that I'm really excited to be here with all of you people.
Oh, it's nice to have you too.
Thank Perfect you. Segue. Graham, it falls to you now as fellow co-presenter, co-host who started this whole magic off back in a broom cupboard in London in 1984, I think, from that point of view. So would you like to throw the two questions that have been kind of growing since then to the team today? Over to you, Graham.
So have you all had a reasonably interesting conversation?
Far more than reasonably.
And the second question is, will you all come back again?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Wants us to end.
me too. Yeah,
okay. Now we've had obviously Simon and Garfunkel. I'm tempted to go Mamma Mia, but is there another ABBA song, Tessa, Annie, that you'd like to see? Even I'm confusing her now. I mean, she looks so much like her daughter Tessa Snart. You know, sometimes I just think it's just one of the same. Still, Annie.
Oh, you're a charmer. You are a charmer.
What would you suggest?
I love them all. Absolutely love them all. So let's go for Chiquitita, I think. I love Chiquitita. Chiquitita. I do love that one as well. Yes, well, I do.
There you go. Does that pass the Pamela Sue Mann test, wrapping up with Chiquitita?
Absolutely. It's the perfect choice.
And following that, we're going to have a feature on the best way to actually host a barbecue with some mixologists. Yes, mixologists, people who specialise, Arthur, in cocktail making. Just goes to show, there's no end to where we push this.
No limit.
The outer limit.
Yeah, well, the outer limits, Graham, is obviously looking at that star a long, 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 long way away, which if we actually look through the billions and billions and billions and billions of years there, I'm sure we'll see an early Graham Harper saying, I want to be Master Bardell. Or what's the
matter? Oh, my God.
Graham Harper, Arthur Weingarten, Annie Snart and Pamela Sue Mann, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. Be safe, be well. And whatever you do, please don't go to Kabul.
Chiquitita, tell me what's wrong. You're in shame by your own sorrow. In your eyes, there is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There is no way you can deny. So sad, so quiet. Chiquitita, tell me the truth. I'm a shoulder you can cry on. You're myself. Now I see you broken and pleasant. Chiquitita, you and I know how the heartaches come and they go and the scars they're leaving. You will be dancing once again and the pain will end. You will have no time for grieving. Chiquitita, you and I cry, but the sun no way you can deny it. I see that you're all so sad, so quiet. Chiquitita, you and I know.
So have a go, potluck, caring. What kind of individual would you say you are when it comes to hosting? Because it is that time, thankfully, we're getting back to hosting things after, of course, the pandemic experience. And to talk us through some of the key aspects relating to being an ideal host and so on, some interesting findings, we're delighted to welcome two awesome individuals. First of all, mixologist extraordinaire Walter Pintus. How are you, Walter?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. And we've also got a major chef extraordinaire, Tom Sensi. How are you, Tom?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. So, I mean, clearly being a host or hostess is very important in terms of your coordinating and other sort of aspects and the impressions that you leave. And it would seem that there are actually five different hosting styles. Tom, would you like to talk us through the kind of five styles and then maybe sort of talk about what the strengths and weaknesses of each one is?
Yeah, so I think it comes down to your personality, obviously. It's kind of like your traits and kind of how you kind of see life, maybe. But, you know, you've got the caring host, which is kind of all about the guests. It's just, you know, very unselfish and just kind of making sure that everyone is catered for, from vegans to any dietary requirements that must be. You've got the have-a-go host, which is kind of like someone that's kind of really going to try their best and maybe try something new as well, which is great. Organized host, which I think I fall under that category, which is kind of making sure everything is planned down to the last minute, making sure that when the guests arrive, it's all good. There's nothing else left to chance at the last minute. Big and bold host is kind of like the extravagant one, which is kind of like someone that's it goes to no expense spared for their guests. The potluck host, which is kind of whatever shortcut that they can take, is I don't think I could do that. That's kind of the different hosts that you get. I mean, yeah, there's quite a few.
You strike me very much as being an organized individual. Of course, the whole notion of the big and bold host would presumably be somebody who would invite both yourself and indeed Walter to the actual thing. You know, not just one, but both, you know, a mixologist and a chef from that point of view. I mean, Walter, when it comes to mixology, I mean, it's become clearly a science over the years. We've said before that if you understand chemistry, you're on the way to actually becoming a mixologist. It's more than just Tom Cruise in Cocktail. So what are your kind of feelings with respect to this? Are you organized? In the case of course, every one of my combinations is meticulously prepared.
Of course, because we have to be organized. We have to plan ahead things. We need to test and make sure what we want to achieve is there. But when it comes to mixologists, it's not rocket science. We tend to make it all sound very complicated, but it's just flavor, it's just passion. I think things come very naturally when you love what you do, and especially when you want to impress someone.
Now, Tom, in terms of actually looking ahead, I mean, clearly Bank Holiday with us and so on, half of British folk are keen to host social gatherings in what remains of the summer and so on. We said the potluck one is a bit risky, but would you say it's a case of make lists? I mean, what would, from your own point of view, be the ideal stages to actually apply if you're thinking of actually hosting, a small barbecue or something?
It's an interesting one. There's a recent survey by Curran Gin who did it's 47% of people kind of would prep the day before, which is great. I think 14% would then ask a guest to bring something with them, which I think is a great idea. It's like, if you can get ready for the weekend ahead, kind of plan, get your shopping in at least, don't leave it to last minute. But then if you can get someone to bring something, a cake, for example, or dessert, which is a great thing. It doesn't mean you have to do everything yourself, and just kind of makes the weekend a bit more enjoyable. Maybe your guests feel kind of maybe a bit more of a part of it too.
Walter, I was intrigued by the line which suggested perhaps consider inviting your neighbour so that you won't have any noise complaints if things get a little bit rowdy. That's a bit kind of Machiavellian, isn't it, Walter?
Exactly. That's the way to do it. You know, just get them over, offer them a drink, a little barbecue. Why not? If you're running a barbecue and make them play a big role in your party. You know, so and then you won't have any complaint. So very, very simple.
And allowing for the fact that whatever your views about Extinction Rebellion, the planet and various other aspects, people are concerned about ensuring that they have sustainable events, it would seem that there is a move to sustainability. I mean, Tom, have you noticed this in terms of ensuring that, you know, waste not, want not, you're not sort of going to have a lot of plastic sort of material there as well?
Yeah, I think it's really important. It's kind of everyone and everyone's minds at the moment. And so it is kind of the issue of the day. And I think it's just, if you can source from the right places, local farmers markets, for example, rather than supermarkets that just have those kind of plastic wrapping, if you can reduce your plastic waste, for sure. But then it's also about the food waste as well, that you're just, you know, you are utilizing everything and you're kind of not overindulging in your food. And if you are, then you're kind of using it over the next few days.
Walter, technology is something which clearly we're using technology today to actually connect. Would you suggest that actually in terms of the planning and so on, setting up various social groups so you can actually chat beforehand about what's being looked for, will that also help the event go more swimmingly?
Yeah, of course, of course. Technology is a great tool there. It's available for everyone, and we should use it and make the most out of it. So when it comes to a party, it's definitely we can check up recipes ahead or food or drinks. For example, there is a beautiful gin, handcraft gin, Scottish gin, where on the website they have some very easy homemade recipes. The name of the gin is Karun, and you can find some easy, straightforward recipe on their website. So check it out and get your cocktail party started.
Okay. Tom, clearly all good things have to come to an end. Even this interview eventually. But in terms of the whole sort of sequence of the clearing up afterwards, what's your best strategy for that? Is it a case of outsource to the children, if there are any, or simply a case of just coordinate some other sort of thing, or is that also in the planning?
Yeah, I mean, difficult one. No one wants to do that, do they? I think that's kind of one of the surveys from Karen Jin that they kind of said that it's one of the worst things about hosting is kind of the clearing up afterwards. I mean, I think if you can get people to help, it's always, you know, it's always a bit easier. I mean, if there's kids around and you can give them a bit more pocket money at the end of the week, then it's just, yeah, teamwork makes the dream work, doesn't it? So
extraordinary. And Walter, we haven't actually sort of just found out which one of the categories would you consider yourself to be in: caring, have a go, organized, big and bold, or potluck?
Well, it's something in between caring and organized, but probably more organized. I like to plan things ahead. And, you know, as Tom said before, get your shopping ready the day before or even 2 days before. Make a list, make a menu, get every single detail nailed down. And then I think your party will be halfway to success.
Walter, I would have been disappointed if you hadn't had a blend of hosting styles. Being a mixologist, it had to be. You couldn't just have one thing or the other. It's got to be a sort of blend. And finally, Tom, where can people go to find out further details about this survey and some of the other areas we've chatted about today?
Yes, you can head to karunjin.com. It's got everything on there, kind of like tips, tricks and gin hacks. So, yeah, head over there.
It has been, as I knew it would be, quite an awesome experience. And clearly, Tom and Walter, you'd be on everybody's A-list of people to invite to a party. So we simply have to say, Tom Sensi, chef extraordinaire and mixologist, equally extraordinaire, Walter Pintus, huge thanks. And happy gin parties.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
Hi, my name is Stereo Mike.
This is Liquid, ring a ding a ding. I want those 3 grand band tickets, man. What do you think? Time.
It's alive.
I woke up again this morning with the sun in my eyes. When Mike came over with a script surprise, a mafioso story with a twist. A 2-1 fool, Julie Yuma, here to get your ass out of bed. He said, I'll explain it on the way.
We did nothing, absolutely nothing that day. And I say, what the hell am I doing drinking in LA at 26? I got the fever for the flavor, the payback for the labor, but still I'm in a fix.
Yeah, and the girls on the bus kept on laughing at us as we rode around town down to Venice again. Flaring out the G-Funk, sipping on juice and gin. Just me and a friend, feeling kinda groovy, working on a movie.
Yeah, right!
But we did nothing, absolutely buckets that day. And I'll say, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at 26?
With my mind on my money and my money.
Some men there wanted to hurt us, and other men said we weren't worth the fight.
mask, I see them all bitching by the bar, above the fine line between the rich and the poor. They might turn to me and say, what you think we